All right.
All right.
Hi, guys.
Hello.
Welcome back
to the Flick Chicks podcast.
I'm Allison.
And I'm Jane.
And how are you, Jane?
I'm good. It's been a wild couple weeks for me. I'm not going to go into it, but if anyone in my personal life is listening, you know what I'm talking about.
Oh, my God.
It's just been pretty chaotic, but it's all right. It's getting better.
Yeah, it's finally working itself out.
Yeah, but it's all right, and I'm glad we got to see this movie.
Yes, this was a real treat.
It was. I enjoyed it, and how are you doing?
I'm good. I'm so tired. Going back to work, like, kills me.
Absolutely.
Kills me. And then I'm trying to, like, you know, my first year that I moved, I basically did literally nothing except work and go home.
Right.
And now I'm trying to get out a little more, do a little more stuff. But it also means I'm so tired.
Yeah, trying to have, like, a social life while also
working full time. Yeah. Oh, my God. How do we do it?
How?
We don't.
Yeah.
Barely do it. I don't know. That's it. But this movie was a real treat. You know, I wasn't sure.
Oh, me neither. I thought this was going to be another Smile.
A little bit. Because it looked, the trailer looked a little bit on par, I won't lie, with Smile.
Mm-hmm.
And then I heard good things.
Yes.
But I was like, I heard good things about Smile.
Exactly, but, and like, what are these standards?
And those were untrue.
Exactly.
You can't really trust horror reviews very much.
No, because we've talked about this so many times in our podcast, but, like, the bar is just so low.
It's too low,
and people think that bad horror movies are good because
because they got a little jump scare
exactly, in on them. Exactly.
You get one jump scare in on them, and they're like, well, that was great, I was scared, and you're like,
That's cheap!
That's a cheap thrill. It's a cheap scare. I want real scares. Like, Nathan Fielder making that haunted house.
Yeah, for sure. Was it so scary that you experienced?
Because you could sue.
Because you could sue.
Not that I'm telling you to sue.
Was it too scary? Yeah, first of all, let's talk about the biggest jump scare of the whole movie.
Just right off the bat,
yeah.
They're Australian.
Australian?
Didn't know that.
No, that was not clear to me going into the movie, and it happened. I was like, why are they talking like that?
Yeah, I was like, what's wrong with them? I can't even understand what they're saying. And then I was like, oh, it's a party and they're Australian? Well, I'm not catching a single line in dialogue.
Rowdy Australians?
I'll have to put it together through context clues, because I don't know what they're saying.
I've looked at our demographics, and I don't think we have a ton of fans in Australia, so I feel fairly safe saying this. Yeah. Not to generalize a whole country, but
even if we did, I don't care if every single listener we have is Australian. To be honest, like,
Allison doesn't care if she gets canceled.
Yeah, I'm not afraid to stand up for my beliefs. It's a little.
She's also a racist against British people, specifically their cuisine
and their accents. It's a little thing called conviction.
Holy shit. I stand up for my beliefs. I don't know about you.
Yeah. I don't know about you, Jane. I'm not wishy-washy. Okay. Just because we may or may not have some Australian listeners. I'll tell you a bit. You sound fucking stupid.
Okay, Joe Rogan.
Wow.
Oof.
I feel like I've been shot. I'm gonna open my Coke Zero.
Yeah, I looked for a can and they didn't have it, so.
It's okay. I have, like, a bottle, too.
Yeah.
I'm on Coke Zero these days, guys.
She is. I'm on coffee.
I'll tell ya.
No creamer.
Oh. None of that baby shit.
Yeah, I'm not a baby. What are you, a baby, having milk in your coffee?
Mm-hmm. I can't even drink coffee because I'm such a baby. I have to have my soda. I was on Diet Coke for a little bit, and I'll do a Diet Coke every now and again, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But it's just too sweet.
It's too much. That's also why I don't like it. It's just not.
The artificial sweetness is somehow more, it tastes, like, in my brain, more sweet than just the sugar.
I agree.
But I don't know what they put in this Coke Zero,
but
they figured it out.
Right.
They figured out the levels to where it actually kind of, like, tastes like, it doesn't taste exactly like real soda, but it tastes like a good soda.
Right, exactly. Close enough.
As opposed to a sugary imitation. It, like, Diet Coke tastes like when you buy the Sam's version of Coke.
Oh, that's so true. It's just, like, off.
It's off. But at least it's its own beverage, kind of. But yeah. Sometimes I like a Diet Coke with, like, a lime.
Oh, yeah. I love any kind of, like, a lime or a lemon in a Coke.
Mm-hmm. It's refreshing.
It is. It's very good. We talked about this a little bit before we started recording, but this movie is directed by a pair of brothers named Danny and Michael Philippou.
We're not really sure how to say their last name.
But I'm very sorry. But Danny and Michael are YouTubers, and they made, like, comedy horror, and now they are branching out into, obviously, films. And this is something we've seen with Skinamarink.
Yeah, this was Skinamarink. Same, that guy also was a YouTuber. I don't know if these guys are more famous than that guy was. That guy only had, like, four.
I think they are. They have awards. They have, like, okay. Best International Channel Streamy Award.
Oh, they got a Streamy. They probably got a lot of followers.
Oh, they're twins.
Oh, scary. That's scary.
Oh, that's also a jump scare. This movie was made by twins.
Oh, I don't like when I find out.
Okay, if there's a pair of Australian twins listening to this.
Sorry, but you're, like, kind of what I see when I have sleep paralysis. You're my sleep paralysis demon.
Those Australian twins.
Australian twins, they're just talking at me, and I'm like, nar.
Wow.
Clear.
Yeah, Australian YouTube channel created in 2013 and run by the twin brothers. Known for its live-action horror comedy videos, and it's won a lot of some Streamies and a couple of awards for Best Web Show.
Well, that's true. I love seeing people, you know, who break into filmmaking from the ground up.
Absolutely. I love it. What's up? You know, they start with, like, the horror for the people.
Exactly. And that's what we need.
Yeah.
None of this elite horror coming out of James Wan.
Oof. After that sick, solid James Wan burn.
That's right. Yeah, I'm not holding back today. I don't know if you can tell, but I'm a little bit...
She's a little rowdy today. Wow, okay, Southpaw. Jeez. Okay. So, yeah, this movie premiered at the Adelaide Film Festival in 2022.
So we're just now receiving it almost a year later.
Yes, and then it premiered in Australia and around the world in July.
Oh, we're just now getting it?
Yeah.
It's kind of good, though. It's closer to Halloween.
Yeah.
But, you know, some places, they don't really celebrate Halloween.
Yeah, that's so true.
Like, in England, they didn't really celebrate it.
Yeah.
Like, they knew about it, and they had it.
But it's just so fun.
It's the best holiday, and I told people that, and they were like, are you crazy? And I was like, what do you celebrate, that the holiday where they burn a statue and light fireworks off? I forgot what it's called, but I was like, we have that. That's a music festival here.
Oh, people shit in buckets there.
People get rained in for weeks.
This movie was obviously made in Australia, by Australia. This had a ton
Australia.
Well, it says Screen Australia.
Oh, Screen Australia. I thought the country of Australia
It says Screen Australia, South Australian Film Corporation. So, like, a lot of Australian
film. It's all the Australian film companies.
This movie, we were talking about, like, how there were just so many when we were watching this in the theaters. Like, it was just one production company after another.
Our very first impression was, a lot of people had their hands on this movie.
Yeah, a lot.
I was unsure.
Yeah, sometimes that's a red flag.
Yeah, seems like one of the rare times where the amount of cooks was actually an appropriate amount.
Yeah, it always, like, okay, I don't watch, like, Family Guy, but obviously back in the day, it was just ingrained in everyone's minds because everyone was watching it all the time. Mm-hmm. And I just have that bit, like, do you remember that bit where, like, he's watching and he thinks that the movie's starting, but it's actually just, like, the production companies.
Production company.
I love that bit.
It was like that.
It was like that. This is running at a tight 95 minutes, which I love.
Yeah, perfect length.
This is really impressive. It had a budget of $4.5 million, and it has made $66.2 million.
Wow, they made that for cheap.
Yeah, it's impressive, given, like, how professional it looks.
I have to know what Skinamarink is up to. Because what was Skinamarink's budget? It was, like,
$15,000? Yeah, it was something that we could get.
Yeah, I remember being like, oh, I could raise $15,000.
Exactly, we could do that.
That would actually be really easy. It's not rated. How is it not rated? It came out in movie theaters.
Skinamarink?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's wild.
Get it rated. Okay. Skinner Inc. is up to 2.1 mil.
And, okay. Well, I mean, obviously, remember when we were doing the podcast and we talked about how it was referred to as a box office success? And it was
and
like,
you were like,
I think if money, you have a budget like that.
Money success. Money in that he took home, he's like, him and two other people are the entire cast, crew, writer, director, producer, and actors. And now they all get to split 2 mil. And they have 15 grand of their own money. I mean, yeah, that's, I call that a success.
I'm not going to lie.
I'm not sneezing, you know. If the 4 minute tissue issue started pulling in, you know.
Oh, that's so true.
$1,000.
Our magnum opus, you mean?
If I brought in $20,000 from the tissue issue, I spent $30 on toilet paper, I'd be pretty pleased. Mm. But is $20,000 a box office success? No. It's by most standards a box office failure.
Okay, so do you want to get into the plot?
I do.
All right. At a crowded house party, Cole searches for his brother, Duckett. When Cole finds Duckett and attempts to bring him home, Duckett stabs his brother before dying by suicide. I'm not going to say committing, because that has connotations that suicide is a crime. And I'm not going to delve into that
he also,
kind of stigma.
You know, spoiler, but he's not really at fault too much.
It's so true. So, he killed himself by stabbing himself in the face.
Womp, womp.
Womp, womp. Which was a really great opening, I will say.
I agree. I was like, ooh.
This is, like, intriguing, and I do like it when films, like, have that first kind of, not even jump scare, but, like.
It's just, like, you want to know what's going on.
Exactly.
It's graphic. It shows you the end. It shows you the stakes.
Yeah.
What is our end result going to be for these new characters if they don't figure it out? It both shows the stakes, gets you intrigued, and then the rest of the movie is not only us watching the story play out, but us watching out probably how that other guy's
exactly,
story played out.
Exactly.
It's a good way to start a horror movie.
It is. Meanwhile, 17-year-old Mia, first of all, did not read that she was 17. I was like, this woman is 20 years old.
Oh, yeah. They do seem, I mean, clearly they're like 20-year-old actors.
Right.
I did know that they were supposed to be in high school. And I knew they were at least 16 because they drive.
Right.
Yeah. Definitely look a little old.
Yeah.
But that's...
That's the standard, I think.
Yeah.
Anyway, 17-year-old Mia is struggling with the second anniversary of her mother, Rhea's. Mia and Rhea. Rhea's... Sorry, I should...
Some of this you don't catch in the movie theater.
No.
Because when they're Australian and they say it,
yeah,
it kind of sounds okay, but then you read it and you go,
what? Or maybe it's Rhea. I don't know. I'm sorry. Rhea's death by overdose and her distant relationship with her father, Max. Driving at night, she comes across a fatally injured kangaroo, but cannot bring herself to put it out of its misery. Yeah, this, like, hardcore placed us in Australia.
I thought this was so funny because them coming upon a deer scene is so classic.
Oh, of course.
So classic, but of course, because it's Australia, they were like, kangaroo.
It's gotta be a kangaroo.
Yeah, I've got a place in Australia, and I was like, this is so funny. Like,
oh, it was really funny.
Also, I do have to say it. We've got to stop with the deer bit.
Oh, my God. It's overdone at this point.
Too many people
Get
have
Out
done
got it.
It,
and it just should have ended there.
It's too it, many people have done it. Killing of a sacred deer, okay. I get it.
Right.
Cool. It's okay. Every indie horror movie can't have it, though, okay? Every indie horror movie. That's one thing The Conjuring's not doing.
That's true.
And I have to give them props for that. They've never succumbed to it.
Good for them.
Good for them. It used to be cool in indie, and now it's mainstream. It's time to drop the deer thing. And just replacing it with a kangaroo doesn't mean that I don't get it.
Doesn't mean that I don't understand what you're trying to do.
Okay.
They come across it. They can't bring it. She can't put it out of its misery because she has problems.
Yeah, she definitely should.
Have either, like, called Wildlife Service or whatever, or, like, put it out of its misery.
But she couldn't bring herself to kill it. But she also didn't call anyone, because she was like, well, it's going to die.
You got to do one or the other. You can't just leave it. That's my opinion.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, even if you think it's going to die, even if you know it's going to die, just call someone to get it off the road.
Right.
If nothing else, it's a danger.
Yeah.
And then, I you know, I was a little worried. I didn't necessarily want her to kill it, because that's kind of the trope.
Absolutely.
Killing a deer.
Hit and running the deer?
But I think it's worse. Yeah, it's worse to just leave it.
I think so.
That's why it all happened, I guess, because they hit that kangaroo. Not really, though. The kangaroo really never came back. Kind of just...
I think it was just probably trying to show us, like, Mia's character, I guess.
Yeah, that she can't.
She can't commit.
She can't commit. She's too wishy-washy.
Mia, her best friend Jade, and Jade's little brother Riley, who's like 14.
Yes.
I just want to make that clear.
He looks like 16.
But he is established to be...
meant to be 14.
Yes. Little brother Riley sneak out to one of many gatherings hosted by Haley and Joss, where the main attraction is a severed, embalmed hand of mysterious origin. Holding the hand and saying, "Talk to me," allows a person to commune with a spirit followed by saying, "I let you in," enabling the spirit to possess them. Sorry, I'm going to take a drink.
Yeah, essentially, what's the... Mia? Mia.
Mia's the main character.
Really yes. Wants to go to this. Her best friend Jade is kind of like, it's all fake. And they, like, Haley posts on his story mm-hmm. all the time, these videos of it. And she's like, well, why don't we just go? Like, it'll be fun. And they go... to a party where they're all gonna do this thing to let the ghost possess them. Kind of an interesting...
I haven't seen it. I haven't seen that in a
while. I haven't seen it either. I mean, it's a classic possession. It's a classic kind of like Ouija board type style movie.
Right.
But it's interesting the idea of that the hand is the connection.
Absolutely.
And that the connection can be physically broken
mm-hmm.
by taking the hand away.
Right, and it's also interesting that in this, it's kind of bringing also that into the day and age where people are, like, recording it and stuff, and, like, that's yeah. part of, like, the whole deal is that they're recording it yeah. and thinking it's funny to look back on it, which is, like, classic edgelord, you know, teen behavior.
Yeah.
Talk to me, I let you in, letting them possess them. The connection must be severed before 90 seconds in order to prevent the spirits from binding themselves to that person. Mia volunteers to go first and is possessed by a spirit that displays a menacing focus on Riley. That's the younger brother. Creepy.
It is.
And it's also established creepy. That Riley kind of has a crush on Mia.
Yeah, they definitely have a relationship.
Outside of
you
him.
You kind of always are like, ugh. You're kind of just like, they're a little bit close for that to be your best friend's little brother.
Right. It's a little abnormal.
It's a little bit too close. But it's, like, it always, like, remains on the line of, is it creepy or is she just, like, family?
Right.
Or, like, what's the deal? And I think we see that really early on because she ends up picking up Riley.
Yeah.
Before we meet Jade because Jade gets busy and forgets to pick up her little brother. Mm-hmm. So Riley calls Mia. She picks him up. And you can tell they're kind of having a good time.
Right. Well, they're, like, singing Chandelier.
Yeah. And
that establishes, like, you're like, oh, this is brother and sister.
Yeah. At first, we thought they were legitimate siblings. Right. But it's not her legitimate sibling. And, yeah, it's kind of like...
It's the implication.
The demon also says some stuff that implies that it's not necessarily the demon that's interested in Riley,
mm-hmm.
but Mia herself might be interested in Riley.
Right.
Like the demon says some stuff in the first person, but also says stuff like, oh, she likes you.
Yeah.
So you're kind of like,
It definitely, like, kind of taints the whole relationship.
It immediately kind of makes you think, like, number one, are these demons able to see the mind mm-hmm. of the people they're in?
Right.
Is, like, one of the first things you kind of think is, like, oh, I guess she can read Mia's thoughts.
Mm-hmm.
But then you're like, or is it a liar because it's trying to taint the relationship? It's just trying to freak Riley out.
Right.
So this is kind of, like, immediately sets you on the standard, which is, this is a theme you see pretty much through the whole movie of, it's very difficult to tell what is and isn't true.
Yeah, and I think that, like, also kind of connects to Mia being an unreliable narrator.
Very much so.
Connection must be severed. Joss and Haley manage to break the connection, but only after the time limit is exceeded slightly. So this means that, in theory, Mia has a spirit connected to her now.
Or at least somewhat.
Yes.
Mia, ecstatic over the feeling that the hand brought her, it got her high, basically, along with Haley, Joss, and Jade's boyfriend Daniel, all gather at Jade's house the next night. Jade refuses to let Riley participate because he's her 14-year-old brother.
Yeah, and she's like, yo, no. I mean, pretty early on, you kind of start to get the feeling that this hand is basically, like, a metaphor for drugs.
Absolutely.
And so, if you think of it that way, too, it's like, well, I might do the drugs, but I don't want my little kid brother to do the drugs because he's a little kid and I'm, like, responsible for him, kind of.
She does it, though, doesn't she, Jade?
No, Jade doesn't do it.
Okay.
Her boyfriend does it.
It doesn't mention that here, but I don't think she does. I don't remember her.
She never does it. It's Haley does it. Joss does it. Mm-hmm. Mia does it. And Daniel tries it because this is where we get that really disturbing scene with Daniel.
With the dog.
Where he's, like, humping the floor.
Yeah, and then he makes out with a dog.
Yeah.
That was so fun to watch in a theater.
Oh my gosh, our crowd was...
That was so fun!
So fun.
I loved them. Everyone was like, oh my god,
ew! We were having visceral reactions to this movie. It was just a fun... It's always fun when the crowd, like, is vocal and reacts and stuff.
Yeah, I loved it. It was so funny. The people next to us were, like... freaking out. It was so fun.
So, yeah, but Jade doesn't do it and won't let Riley do it either.
Yeah.
But then Daniel goes last before what you're about to talk about.
But all of the others indulge, enjoying the euphoria of possession. When Jade leaves the room, Mia gives in and lets Riley take a turn.
And Jade, this,
oh my gosh.
Jade leaves the room because Daniel, her boyfriend, the demon inside him basically says that Daniel isn't attracted to Jade and that he's attracted to Mia because he and Mia used to have a thing a long time ago, but it was like a little baby thing.
That was like elementary school.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Like they were probably like legit in middle school and it was like hand holding.
Yeah.
But then he starts staring at Mia and essentially like jerking off like by grinding against, like he knocks himself over and is grinding against the floor and he's like kind of like the dog's kind of like humping his face and like it's and then basically Jade's super upset because she's like,
what the fuck?
And also like another example of, is the demon telling the truth
or is it
can the demon see into Daniel's mind and knows that Daniel actually doesn't like Jade and still has a thing for Mia?
Or is it just wreaking havoc?
Is it just wreaking havoc? And
It's an interesting question, and I like that we don't know.
Not necessarily. Like, there's doubts.
Yeah, absolutely.
We know some stuff by the end, but I don't think we necessarily have all the answers.
Right. I think this scene where Mia lets Riley do it, I think that is such an establishing moment for her character.
This is also probably one of the most horrifying scenes to me in the entire movie.
Oh, it's horrible.
A really interesting scene that they don't talk about, it's very, very small, but it happens in between these two parties. So, after Mia has tried it for the first time, and we have that experience where the demon is kind of, like, hitting on Riley, and it's really weird. That night, Riley gets scared and wants to sleep in his sister's bed, but she won't let him.
Yeah.
So, he goes and sleeps in Mia's bed.
Yeah.
And they, like, fall asleep together.
Yeah.
It's very odd, and then the next day is when they have the party with the hand where Mia lets Riley try it.
Mm-hmm.
And essentially what happens is Daniel goes, Jade's really pissed because of what happened with Daniel. And then Riley wants to go and she says no. And then Riley's like, come on, please. What if I only went for, you know, half the time or whatever, like whatever. And so then Mia starts being like, oh, come on, just let him go.
Yeah.
What if he only went? And she was like, shut the fuck up, Mia.
Right, you're supposed to be my friend.
Yeah, like, what are you doing? But then she has to go deal with Daniel.
Yeah.
She, like, storms out because she's upset about Mia and Daniel. And Daniel leaves to go console her, essentially.
So it's just Haley, Joss,
and
Riley and Mia.
And then Haley and Joss both say, yeah, man, sorry, if your sister says no, then that's the answer. But then Mia's like...
pushes for it.
Basically, he just asks again, and he's like, what if I only went for for 45 seconds, 45 seconds, yeah. when it's, like, half of the time. And she's like, okay. Yeah. She doesn't want to seem uncool.
Right.
Like, essentially, you can really tell that
she just wants all the approval.
Really desperate for this, like, little kid's approval.
Yeah.
I mean, I know they're only 3 years apart, but still, like...
It's weird.
It's weird.
It gives... It's giving personality disorder.
Yeah, it's giving desperate for other people's approval.
Yeah.
Weirdly, not her best friends, though.
Riley appears to be possessed by Rhea's spirit, who attempts to reconcile with Mia.
And that's her mom, if you don't remember.
Yeah. Mia stops the group from ending the possession to keep talking to her mom, completely disregarding the time limit.
Yeah.
This is so fucked up.
It's so upsetting. This is, like, such an upsetting scene. Oh, my God.
I can't also, let's just say, I can't believe Haley and Joss here.
No, yeah.
They know the consequences.
Yes.
And they know.
At least
know.
Joss does. Does Haley know?
Haley knows you're not supposed to go over 90 seconds.
Right, but Joss knows, like, what happens.
Joss knows legit what happens.
Right.
And the fact that they, their 45 seconds passes, they let her know it's 45 seconds, and she just says, like, hold on, hold on. Okay, I can see holding off to 90 seconds.
Right.
But at 90 seconds, how are you not pulling the hand off?
Right.
It goes Ooh. For so long.
So long, like minutes.
Minutes. I think it's, like, they say it's, like, 2.5 minutes or something yeah. by the end.
Ooh.
Way longer than
it's
they're supposed
so
to.
It's so upsetting.
And,
Riley's body is overtaken by spirits who make him attempt suicide by repeatedly smashing his face against the table.
This is the most
it's horrifying.
Upsetting scene.
And he is hospitalized in critical condition.
This is probably, this scene and, like, there's, like, one other scene are, like, the most upsetting scenes in the whole movie.
And the practical, like, makeup effects is amazing.
It honestly reminds me of, like, in, it's very similar to how I felt in Hereditary when he, like, starts smashing
yes,
his head
absolutely.
Against the desk.
It's such an upsetting image.
Yeah, I just hate people smashing their own faces and liking it is, like, ooh.
Yeah.
It's, like, for me, it's like mirror stuff. I hate mirror stuff. And this, ugh.
Mia, now haunted by visions of her mother, is turned away by Jade and Jade's mother, Sue, both of whom blame her for Riley's injuries. Obviously.
Yeah, right.
Because it's her fault.
Yeah, it is her fault. Her mom blames her for different reasons, but yeah.
Well, they think that he was on drugs. She gave him drugs.
Yeah, the mom believes that, like, Mia supplied them with drugs.
Right.
And that's what made Riley, like, have a breakdown and freak out.
Mia repeatedly uses having secretly taken the embalmed hand, Mia repeatedly uses it to contact her mother, who insists her death was accidental and that she needs to help Riley, who is still possessed and attempts suicide every day, every time he returns to consciousness.
Yeah, essentially, like, this is where we also learn, this is the first time we ever see anybody use the hand just to talk to a spirit
mm-hmm.
and not to
get
possessed.
Yeah.
So it becomes clear that actually you can just speak to a spirit by holding the hand, and then they can't possess you unless you let them in.
Yeah.
So then, but then you can, like, let go of the hand and not talk to them.
Haley and Joss tell Mia, Jade, and Daniel where they got the hand and explain that the spirits can imitate people. They track down Cole, who says that the spirit's hold on Riley will eventually weaken on its own.
Do they say the spirits can imitate people? I don't feel like they say that in the movie.
I don't think they do.
Now, Daniel does say something because she does bring up the fact to Daniel that she's... So this is even before this. She brings up the fact to Daniel. She basically is, like, freaked out. Daniel comes over to her house.
Yes. And now, then they share, oh my God, the foot scene.
And they end up, like, sleeping in the same bed, but not, like...
Doing anything. They're sleeping, like...
Foot to head,
yeah.
And she tells Daniel, essentially, that, like, she's been talking to her mom,
mm-hmm.
and that she stole the hand in order to be talking to her mom, because that's who had possessed Riley. And he basically said, how do we even know that that's your mom?
Right.
Like, I think, now this is, like, to me, one of the interesting things that begs the question of, was what Daniel's demon said true?
Mm-hmm.
Is he actually attracted to Mia? And kind of not, maybe not in the way, like, oh, he's disgusted by Jade. Like,
yeah.
Maybe that's not true. But maybe, like, he is kind of having some doubts about Jade and kind of likes Mia. I
right.
think that is possible because of what he talks about here, where he says, I think they can, like, see everything in our heads and then can kind of, like, use that. And then not to mention his actions here where he spends the night with her.
Right.
Despite the fact that she literally betrayed Jade, his girlfriend.
Yeah. Literally put her brother in the hospital.
Like, almost dead. Like, I think Daniel must have some feelings for Mia.
Absolutely.
Because they kind of almost kiss in the scene. But then
she has, like, a dream.
She basically wakes up in the middle of the night, and she sees this, like, lady demon that she is the demon that originally possessed her, I believe.
Yes.
Like, when they first did talk to me, and she went for, like, 93 seconds or whatever.
Yeah.
She sees that lady again in her house. And then the lady comes over and starts sucking on Daniel's toes.
Oh, my God!
And I mean sucking on.
Sucking on. Our theater went bananas.
I mean foot in mouth, kind of. Like, it was...
It was far in there.
It was intense.
Deep throating.
And disgusting. And then, we flash out. It's not that lady at all.
It's Mia!
It's Mia, and she's, like, asleep. She's, like, possessed by the lady.
And she's sucking on Daniel's toes.
Because she is attracted to Daniel. Daniel wakes up, flips the fuck out.
Obviously.
And then essentially after that, there's no more Daniel, Mia, will they, won't they.
That really,
it sealed it for Daniel. Yeah. He was on the fence. But that does, to me, raise the question of, okay, number one, can the demons actually read your thoughts?
Right.
And Daniel essentially brings up the idea that it's like, you don't actually know that the person you're talking to is that person.
Yeah, they
could
be lying.
And even if it is that person, like, you don't know that they're the same person.
Yeah.
Yeah, if they know everything that's in your head, then, like, what's to stop them just from making shit up?
Right.
And also we find out that apparently Mia's still seeing ghosts.
Yes, even without the hand.
Even without the hand. She does not have the hand here. And that they can make her do stuff. They kind of have possession of her body. Not fully, but a little bit.
Right. And this is connected back to what happened with Cole's brother, Duckett. And that they say that he started seeing things without the hand.
And Duckett is the guy that stabbed himself at the beginning.
Yeah.
Interestingly, as well, we also know from the first scene that Duckett and Cole, their mom died.
Yes.
We don't know how she died, but she also was dead, and it seems like Duckett was using the hand in a similar way to Mia
to contact her, yeah.
Yeah, to commune with his mom, and was, like, seeing her, because at one point, he tells Cole, like, I was talking to mom.
Yeah.
And then he says, mom's dead, yeah. Duckett.
So they track down Duckett's brother, Cole, and he says that the hold on Riley will weaken on its own as long as he doesn't use the hand.
Yeah, Cole basically says, this is exactly what I told my brother and what happens to everyone. If you just stop touching the fucking hand, eventually it goes away. Like, they will just lose their hold on you. I think the thing is, like, 90 seconds is what they need to take any amount of hold, but they don't have full control of you. So if you don't interact with it, it will go away.
Right.
But the longer they were inside, the more control they have, which is why Riley is having such a hard time.
Yes.
So essentially, you just need to keep Riley sedated for a long enough time.
Right. Mia, fearing that Riley may not have time, attempts to contact him in the hospital by using the hand, but is instead shown a vision of Riley being tortured in limbo.
Yeah. Oh, this is an interesting scene, too, because this is where she meets the little girl.
Yeah.
So at one point, Mia decides the same thing. She's going to talk to Riley. She grabs on the hand, and she communes with the little girl spirit, and she asks her if she's seen Riley. And the little girl essentially says yes.
Mm-hmm.
And then you figure out that the spirits can invite humans in.
Yes.
Because
she goes into her mind.
Yes, she goes into the little girl's body and is able to see what the little girl sees. Sees Riley being essentially, like, torn asunder by a pack of demons.
Yeah, it's wild.
And then she exits the little girl's body.
Again, very impressive effects.
Oh, yes.
At home, Max reads her mother's suicide.
Max, her father.
Yes, Max reads Rhea's suicide note to Mia, apologizing for hiding the truth from her.
It's really sad. Yeah, you find out that Mia there's, like, Mia has doubt about whether or not it was an accidental overdose or an on-purpose overdose. And her father has, like, let her keep that doubt and hasn't told her one way or the other. But after she starts having all these issues, her dad decides, like, I need to tell her the truth that her... You find out her mom, definitely did definitely it on purpose. Definitely did it on purpose. And perhaps then later regretted it.
Yeah.
And tried to...
Get a hold of
someone. Get a hold of someone, but it was too late.
Yeah.
Soon after, Rhea's spirit tells Mia that Max is lying. Mia hallucinates that she is being violently attacked by Max, then inadvertently stabs the real Max in the neck with a pair of scissors when he hears the commotion and breaks down the door for her, to her room to check on her.
Yeah.
Yeah, she just straight up kills her dad.
Yeah.
Or attempts to kill him.
But it's kind of an accident, like, essentially...
She's kind of hallucinating.
She essentially is seeing a vision of her dad, a kind of, like, corpsified version of her dad that's possessed, choking her, and then it's flashing out, and you see that actually it's her choking herself, that she is possessed, kind of, and is choking herself, and her dad's trying to bust down the door to help her. He does bust down the door, he is able to get her to stop, but while she was trying to stab the hallucination dad, her real dad got in the way, and she stabbed him in the neck with scissors, and then she just leaves him.
Yeah.
At this point, it's kind of like Mia's, like, breaking point.
Yes.
Her, like, stabbing her dad is kind of a breaking point, because I don't think she realizes that it's an accident necessarily. Mm-hmm. I think she legitimately thinks she gets the demon out.
Yeah.
I think to her, she sees her dad all fucked up, and then she stabs him, and then she looks up, and he's normal.
Right.
I think she's like, oh, I saved him. Mm. Which is exactly what her mom's been telling her the whole time, which is... You can save them, but you have to hurt them to save them.
Yeah. These demons, they're really throwing a wrench in her whole thing.
Yeah, her mom, it's not really clear to me if her mom is saying you just have to stab them in order to get the demons to leave and then they're fine, or you have to kill them because it's the only way to free them from the demonic plane or whatever and allow them to go to the afterlife or something.
Yeah.
But then I'm like, well, then why is her mom there?
Yeah.
Because her mom wasn't possessed when she died.
Yeah.
After being told by her mother that Riley needs to die in order to be set free from his possession, and hallucinating the injured kangaroo from earlier, Mia kidnaps Riley from the hospital, intending to put him out of his misery. Jade sees her pushing him in a wheelchair towards the highway's edge. Rhea attempts to convince Mia to push Riley into the oncoming traffic, but when she says, we'll have him forever, Mia realizes that Rhea has been the malevolent spirit from her initial possession manipulating her all along. Mia steps away from the wheel...
Is that what she realizes?
I don't know.
I don't know that the movie makes that clear, but we can talk about this.
Mia steps away from the wheelchair as Jade rushes toward them to save her brother. Traffic comes to a halt, and Mia lies badly injured on the road. So, yeah, she pushes...
The movie kind of implies that she was gonna push Riley.
Yeah.
But she hesitated, and Jade
pushed her first.
Like, I don't know that it makes it clear that she came to realize she was being manipulated. I think that... her hesitation on the deer is the same hesitation that gives her hesitation here.
Absolutely.
That she's just a little scared to kill someone.
Right.
And then in that time that she hesitates, that's all the time it takes for Jade to shove her into the oncoming traffic.
Right.
I don't know if the movie makes it clear that she ever figures out what has happened to her.
I don't think so.
I don't think
that's
it does
not the
either.
Vibe. That's not the vibe I got.
Well, and here's the thing. The reason that that spirit hasn't gone away is because she keeps using the fucking hand.
Right.
And it seems clear to me that Daniel's correct in that all the demons can read everyone's thoughts.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think that's why the demon that took possession of Riley pretended to be her mom.
Right.
I don't think that was ever her mom.
No.
It was the same demon who was like, oh, she's not going to use the hand unless...
Mm-hmm.
Mia suddenly finds herself in the hospital. She sees a fully recovered Riley waking up with his family and her father leaving in an elevator going up. Yeah, her father's alive.
Her father lived. Jade, at one point she sends Jade over to her house to get Jade out of the hospital. And then Jade finds her dad and
calls
the 911 and saves him.
When no one responds to her, Mia realizes that she has died and has become a spirit herself. After becoming engulfed in darkness, Mia approaches a human hand and candle in the distance, finding herself summoned at another party where one of the partygoers says, "I let you in." This is a great ending.
Yeah, you find out that she's one of them. I don't know how you become a hand demon.
I don't either.
Just like literally everyone that dies, that's the fate.
Or if, like, you have to be involved with the hand and die.
But it seems like it really a lot of people.
Yeah.
And then, like,
how old is the hand, though, is the question. It's an embalmed
hand.
That's
true. And you know what? We don't know, too, because it's like her mom isn't actually there.
Right.
Her mom's not who she's talking to the whole time. She's being manipulated. I don't know. To me, I don't think I ever got the feeling that she ever understood that it wasn't her mom. To me, it kind of seemed like her mom, like that little scene where she's like, "Come on, we have to save him. We'll have him forever." That's her convincing Mia. And Mia being like, convinced.
Right.
And her being like, "Yep, you're right, Mom. I gotta do it." And her going to shove Riley, and then you think she shoved Riley at first, but then you figure out that it's Mia, and in fact,
Jade has shoved her. Yeah.
It kind of felt to me like, nah, she didn't figure it out, and she didn't realize anything until she was dead. And even then, I'm not so sure she realized.
Right. She completely realized that it was all fake. But we can assume...
Well, she realizes eventually when she sees that Riley's fine.
Right.
And she knows that she didn't kill Riley.
Yeah.
She's gotta figure it out then.
Yeah. This is interesting, though. All these, like, little pathways that we can go down of explaining what the demons know and what they...
They don't know.
Yeah.
And what they can do, what they can't do. Yeah, it's interesting. It kind of seems to me like they know everything, and then they can choose whether to lie or not.
Right, I think so, too.
Because I think clearly... It's interesting, too, how it's like almost everything they do ends up, like, really affecting Mia.
Yes.
Like, all the demons that take possession really somehow get at Mia as opposed to anything else. But also, Mia's own personality is a major flaw for her.
Yeah, she has some issues with fear of abandonment. And
which, you know,
I think probably comes with the territory when your mother kills herself.
Yeah.
But she also just has some issues with, like, just needing approval from everyone around her.
And that's said explicitly a couple times, too. Like... Jade says it at one point about how she forced herself into her family, and Haley says something about, like, oh, she's so annoying, like, she's always, like, trying to be the center of attention kind of thing. And Haley talks about how Mia's kissing up on Jade's man.
Yeah, she's not the most considerate person.
And it doesn't seem like she really cares for Daniel that much as she just
wants him
to want her.
Right. Exactly.
And same thing with Riley. It's also interesting because you don't really see her have that same thing with Jade, but she kind of has it with literally everybody else.
Right.
And she desperately wants Haley to like her. She wants Riley to like her. It's kind of like male approval to her more than it is female. I mean, I guess kind of her mom. She kind of does want approval from Haley's mom.
Right, but like I think she definitely seeks out like those... I think that's why her relationship with Riley is kind of weird, because she does kind of seem to seek out, like, that...
Male attention. Even if she's not necessarily attracted to Riley.
Right, and she might not even be aware of it, I think.
Yeah. Yeah. I think they want you to think it's a little weird. I don't think they want you to think it's, like, a brother-sister type relationship. Because clearly not, because if it was, she would never have let him touch
her hand. Exactly. She would have had the same opinion as Jade.
Yeah. Who she should have same opinion as, because Jade's a saint in this movie.
Yes. Justice for Jade.
Justice for Jade. Jade gets screwed by literally everyone.
That's so true.
So fucked up that her boyfriend does that, by the way.
Oh my gosh.
So fucked up that Daniel goes to Mia's house, especially when Mia's been acting all the way she has been acting.
Yes. He deserved to get his foot sucked.
He deserved to have his foot bitten off. Ah. He ought to have lost those toes, if you ask me. And directly after the incident with the chair, too.
Right
after that incident, Then she betrays me immediately after that incident with Riley. Then you're, like, sleeping at her house?
Yes.
I'm sorry.
In bed with her?
Yeah, you're in her bed.
Well, we're foot to face.
I don't care.
I don't give a shit.
Well, she sucked your toes.
So, look what happened.
And then he doesn't tell her.
Nope.
And then he doesn't tell her, and she starts to find out. Oh, Jade, I would be single. I know you're going through a lot, but Daniel can... he can suck some toes, to be honest.
He can make out with a dog.
He can make out with a dog.
I thought that the most disturbing part of that whole scene is the scene where he grabs the back of the dog's neck. I thought that was disgusting.
He's against the floor.
It's so gross. That's such fun to watch in theaters, though. That was, like, one of my peak theater experiences of 2023,
I think. Oh, yeah, it was funny. You said you had an article of some kind?
Well, I think we just talked about most of it.
Okay. Well, we had those thoughts on our own.
Yes.
I mean, I definitely think this movie is obviously a representation for drugs. The hand is drugs.
Of course. Of course.
And of course, like, it's like, oh, it gets you closer to the afterlife.
And
it
drama.
Feels so good.
And, like, you reach out for drugs in the midst of escaping your own emotions.
And, you know, those who don't do the drugs, if you just stop doing the drugs...
It'll go away.
It'll go away. A little bit simplistic.
I don't think that's exactly how I would explain addiction.
Nah, but, you know, it's a fun little idea. I mean, it's like one of those things where it's like what Stephen King kind of talks about, where it's like you gotta find things that people are scared of in real life,
right,
and then turn those supernatural, and that's how you make good horror. And it's like, yeah, people are scared of addiction, and what happens if you just do drugs once? It kind of is like a Dare
type
movie.
Yeah.
But one of the more successful pieces of Dare propaganda.
Perhaps the most successful.
If they would show this to kids, but unfortunately.
Fortunately.
If I ever have a child, when they turn about 9 years old, I'll be like,
nine is the proper age.
Sit down. It's time to watch this movie. This is what... This hand is
drugs.
All right, you understand? You see how Riley, he only tried it once.
And he almost died.
And he almost died. Okay? And you see the solution all along? Just stop touching the drugs.
Wow. It is a bit simplistic, though.
I mean, yeah. It's also an embalmed hand.
Yeah.
You talk to. I think it's just meant to be scary.
Scary.
Scary, scary.
I liked it, though.
It was a good... Is this in my top 10?
Of course not.
No.
No.
But it's a good, like, this would be a great movie to show to...
Like a party?
A party. If somebody's just a Halloween, everybody just wants, like, a scary jump scare kind of movie.
Yeah.
I would rather show something like this than something with, like, weird Catholic undertones.
So true. I prefer the Dare propaganda to the church propaganda any day of the week.
Because at least the Dare propaganda is, like, kind of fun.
Yeah, it's kind of like, it's a little more, you know, doesn't take itself as seriously.
Yeah, it's like, oh, we're having a good time. Come on. And, of course, it's like, oh, we do it at parties. Everyone has a party where we come
right.
And touch the hand, and you're like, all right.
And then the danger starts whenever you use drugs alone.
Yep, that's right. That's how you know you're an addict.
Yep.
If you do it socially, that's one thing.
That's the hard and fast
and
rule, guys.
Of course, we're always saying, you need to be older. And
yes.
You need to... People without trauma, they can do drugs. But it's like, it's a dangerous combo when you're
traumatized.
You're an attention seeker. And now, this might be reading into it a little bit. And I guess if you're a black woman, notice that.
Oh,
notice that.
That's so true.
No, is that a coincidence?
I don't think so.
I really have no clue. I hope it's a coincidence. This is a dark turn.
Dark. There's a very dark history associated.
Yeah. Are we a little crack epidemic reaction?
Oh my god. Is this movie a demonstration
about
of the crack epidemic?
White people give it. Oh, I guess Joss isn't white. And they're
I don't think Haley's white either.
Haley's not white?
I don't.
I think Haley's white. He's white.
Oh, look.
I mean, they're all Australian.
Yeah, and that trumps everything
that's,
else.
Yeah, that overtakes...
I mean, that's my primary identity.
That overtakes any other form of identity, of course.
I'm just trying to find... His name is Zoe, and... His nationality is Australian.
White. Is he white?
I'm looking. Yeah, you're right.
He looks white.
You're right.
Okay. Joss is not white, though.
No.
And I suppose the first victim, what was his name? Dudley? Dudden? He had a stupid name. I remember that. The first guy that died, they killed himself in the first part of the movie.
Oh. No, they're white.
Yeah, they're white.
Yeah.
I was like, so, you know, maybe it's not saying that. That was me speculating. I told you guys I was coming for it today. You know? I was ready to accuse these brothers of being problematic right here.
Right here, right now. What would you give this movie?
A 7.
Yes. Yes.
It's fun. And I liked it. And is it awesome? Like, is it going down in my canon of all-time greatest? No.
Might I show it at a party?
Perhaps? Yeah. I'll probably watch it again. If I ever want a movie, sometimes, like, The Shining's great, but there's no jump scares in The Shining. And it's...
There's the one. There's the axe one that's not true. Even in the book. There's they not, had to kill the black guy.
Yeah, they did.
In the movie. That's the rules.
That's the rules. What am I supposed to do?
I don't make them.
What am I supposed to do?
Change the rules?
I know. That's a whole process.
That's such a funny thing that he doesn't die in the book and he dies in the movie. I know. To me, I think that's hilarious. And
then
sad.
When they did Dr. Sleep, they were like, I guess we gotta make him a ghost or something.
Right,
like,
because he's literally in the beginning of the book, Dr. Sleep. Because,
like, he's an important character in Dr. Sleep, but, like, oh, no.
Oh, no, we didn't know he was gonna do this.
He killed him. That's why Stephen King was mad. Stephen King really was just standing up for that guy, that
actor.
It's
so true. It's so true.
Yeah, I mean, I like, sometimes, you know, you just want to watch a movie that's, like, a little scary and maybe isn't that plot-heavy.
Mm-hmm.
But you don't want to watch a shitty movie.
Yeah, the acting is good. The effects are good. It's an fairly original story, or at least an original take on a
possession story.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, it's creepy. And the effects look great.
Yeah, I loved, like, the possession scenes with, like, their eyes and their faces. I thought all of that just looked really good. Do you have a review for me?
Yeah, okay, I've got a few. None of these are, like, hilarious, but they're interesting, so I like this one. 1 out of 10, don't jump on the hype train, this film will let you down.
Mm.
The opening scene was the strongest part of the movie. It is shocking and instantly grabs your attention. However, that energy doesn't carry for the rest of the film. This is an example of an idea outweighing its execution. The concept of the embalmed ham used to conjure spirits is unique, but aside from that, the film doesn't do anything special. The main character grieves the loss of her mother and wishes to connect with her, so she uses the hand. This film reminded me of Insidious Chapter 3, but it wasn't as good. There is...
Haven't seen anything past the first Insidious, I'm gonna be totally honest.
There is only one other scene beside the opening scene that has any kind of tension or suspense. The film lacked atmospheric horror as well as jump scares.
I disagree.
Yeah.
I think both of those things it had. It's Australia. It's an Australian environment.
There wasn't even anything creepy about the spirits that were conjured.
What?
Some of them were bloated, mangled corpses.
They were pretty creepy, I thought.
And some of them were just normal.
Yeah.
The origin of the embalmed hand wasn't concrete, as some characters had different stories as to where the hand came from.
I think that's part of the point.
Well, it would have been nice if they just picked an idea and stuck with it.
Okay.
That's what he says.
Okay.
The development of every single character in this movie is bare bones. The main character is grieving her mother and didn't have a good relationship with her father. Her father made it...
That never happens, Allison. Did you know that?
What?
That girls are never sad about their mother's death and have bad relationships with their
That's
fathers.
That's true.
That's so unrealistic.
So one-dimensional. Also, I would say she's very dimensional. I would just say she's unlikable.
Yeah, which is fine. I'm here for unlikable main characters.
Yeah, especially in horror movies because
oh my
like,
gosh.
Then you don't feel so bad when the bad stuff happens to them.
It's sort of, like, and it also explains, like, their behavior.
Yeah.
That's, like, one of the biggest problems in horror movies is, like, why are these people doing these
yes,
things?
Yes, this is what we
and
talk
this,
about.
And this explains it. Like, this person is...
Yeah, she's desperate for attention and sad.
Yeah, I get it.
Her father was made to seem like he had an important role in the film, but he didn't. She had a best friend who had a little brother and a boyfriend. The dynamic between all those characters is very cliche and corny.
What?
The film was a waste of time. The only good thing about it is that it was over quickly.
I do love that runtime, though.
Oh, the runtime is great. I don't know. None of them are hilarious. This one's all right. When will I learn? I've known for a while that A24 only releases horror films for pretentious people who don't actually like horror, but just want to watch horror. I know this, and yet I keep watching the garbage they release in hopes that just once, okay, twice, as Tusk is a masterpiece.
Oh my god, they're so fucking right. Tusk is a masterpiece, and I will die on that hill, and we have to do that movie. Oh, I love it so much. Okay.
So I hope just once they'll release a good horror movie. Yet here we are again, with a horror film that's well shot, but is an abysmal excuse for a horror film. I wish nothing but the worst for A24.
Whoa.
Actually, that's not true. I wish them the best, even though they consistently put out the absolute worst drivel in
horror. He just made a 180.
Yeah.
What? That's not what you said.
Well, I wish them that they would die. Well, no, I don't wish that. I actually wish they'd be very healthy and have a prosperous life, but I hate them.
But I also hate them and wish they would die.
So, you know, it's complicated.
So take that with what you will.
Absolute joke. I hated it. No idea why this is getting so many good reviews. I really wanted to give YouTubers doing their feature debut the benefit of the doubt.
Stop!
But I am so, that's in all caps, so tired of these same teenage trope movies in current horror movies. As soon as the Sidemen appeared in the cameo, it just felt like YouTubers doing a horror movie. I didn't realize they were in the movie.
Teenagers in horror movies? That's never been, that's not.
This is also I guess the YouTubers appeared in their own movie.
Oh, they had a cameo. They don't like that?
Yeah.
But horror, like, cameos are usually a part of horror.
I like this part. As soon as the Sidemen appeared in the cameo, it just felt like the YouTubers doing a horror movie. And you're like, well, yeah, they are.
They are doing a horror movie.
And they're YouTubers. Okay. Yeah. People calling this the best horror of 2023 just shows how poor the horror landscape in cinema is nowadays. It's nowhere near the level of Hereditary.
You just said you don't like A24 movies!
No, this is a different one.
Oh my god, I was about to lose it. Holy shit.
I know they're trying to appeal to Gen Z, but it's just the same old feeling. Music choices that take you out of any form of tension. Why can't anyone make a good old scary movie without any comedic tropes or witty one-liners?
Yeah, horror movies famously don't contain any comedy.
Yeah. It's really, you know what they teach you about script writing is that if you're making a drama or a horror, just tense, never let up.
Never give a moment of levity,
because that's how people stay engaged.
And that's how people connect to your characters, is if they're just dry.
If it's just like, we are sad the whole time. I don't want a second of
levity.
I
don't want it at all. Get it off my table, and get it off my set!
The only good bits were a straight ripoff of Hereditary. Characters were introduced and phased out. Final act just ended abruptly. Payoff was disappointing. Feel like people reviewing this are all Gen Z horror babies who are giving all...
Jesus.
Who are all giving Oppenheimer 1 star because they didn't get it.
What?
Apparently they're mad about people not liking Oppenheimer. Who didn't get Oppenheimer?
It's pretty,
It's literally...
This is all very on the nose.
It's literally history.
Yeah.
It's not a metaphor for anything.
This is what happened. I don't get it.
I'm not understanding. Like, are you Charlie Day?
Yeah, like, I am a...
The only form of discussion me and my brother got from it is the fear of taking too much drugs and not remembering anything.
Well, they got it, though. I'm glad they got the meaning of the movie.
And not remembering anything from it.
Yeah.
But that just wasn't fleshed out in any truly terrifying way and just kind of made a mockery of it.
Jeez.
They're like, it actually wasn't anti-drug enough.
I wanted a full-on dare movie.
Yeah, I was hoping... Dude, have you seen the movie Shrooms?
No, I haven't.
Okay, well, it's not good. But when I was in, like, the 5th grade, I rented it from a Hastings, and me and my friends watched
it. That's back in the day. That's also what I would
do. And it's a movie about...
They go in a woods, and they take shrooms,
and then their trips become real.
Right.
They start having a bad trip, and then the trips manifest in reality.
Oh.
But they can't get the stuff to go away until they stop tripping. So it's like... They have, like, you know, 12 hours or whatever to, like, fight these things in the woods.
Whoa.
And I remember watching that when I was in the 5th grade, and, like, to this day, it kind of, like, freaks me out. I'm kind of like...
Do I want to try shrooms?
I could never try shrooms, because what if my trips manifested?
Jeez, it did its job then.
It did. That's why I'm saying 9 is the appropriate time that I'm going to show kids this movie.
That's so true. I think that, you know, you all are so right. Drug propaganda horror movies are so much better than church
propaganda. They're better than, like, than giving reality. You need to metaphorically put in their minds that if they do drugs, this could happen to them.
This could happen to you.
Metaphorically.
Yeah, I like it.
You gotta make the kids feel smart for figuring it out. Now, the Shrooms movie was pretty explicitly anti-shroom, which doesn't really make a ton of sense, but...
It feels like a movie people would rent when they're on shrooms.
More than anything, I'm sure it's, like... I'm sure these filmmakers are more making what people thinks happen when you take drugs, because I bet all these filmmakers are taking drugs.
Oh, obviously. They're YouTubers.
Yeah. Horror comedy YouTubers. But, so maybe they're, like... relaying America, I'm sorry, not just America, the world and Australia's fears back
to more specifically Australia.
You know?
Yeah. Absolutely. There are a couple of movies that I want to do this Halloween season with you.
Okay.
Most notably, I want to do Teen Witch.
Ooh.
Which is a fun little romp. It's like, it's just fun, and it's bad. It's like a B movie.
Sweet.
And I think you will like it because it's kind of The Room-esque, but has more musical numbers.
Oh, I will like it.
Yeah. And there's, like, a good song in it. Like, there's, like, I think that I sing a lot. And I'm hot. And you're not. So top that.
I'm so excited for Halloween season.
Oh, me too. It'll be great. I also want to do Tusk, but I don't know where we could find it because it's got taken off of HBO.
Rent it. We'll rent it somewhere.
I'll just need to buy it, honestly.
Buy it, yeah.
I need it. It's wild. But, yeah, we're going to do some horror movies, and we're not going to do The Conjuring.
So don't ask.
So don't ask. Sorry.
Our feelings are clear.
Unless we do a takedown of it.
I feel like we already have.
I think so, too.
Well, we did an entire thing on Ed and Lorraine Warren.
But we didn't
but
get
we
to...
I think we did it on Patreon.
Oh, yeah. I think we did.
So, join Patreon.
But then You're Wrong About did a better job.
Yeah.
Because they had details we didn't know.
It's true. I was like,
yes. Yes.
It's not my full-time job. Sorry.
Apologies.
Everyone keeps sending us stuff about it. I'm going to be honest. Sick of it. You try to get up here, okay, and talk into a microphone for 1 hour. That's very hard.
It's so hard. We can't even talk for that long. You know that about us.
No, we hate talking. Oh, my God.
All right. Well, we'll probably get a couple more spooky movies out for you between now and October. So be looking for that. All right.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks. Bye.